Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 126. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brayden Oski.
I'm Austin Morales.
And I'm Luis Gonzalez.
And today on The Inner Gamer, we're going to talk about Ultimate Street Fighter II, The Final Challengers. We also have some upcoming releases. Intel reveals some new i9 core series. And they
18
can play
cores.
18
Hell
cores.
Yeah.
And they can play 4K games. What the hell? I don't know what that's about. We're also going to be discussing our Road to E3, Nintendo, and Ubisoft E3 predictions. It's loaded with a ton of games that we're hoping to be there and have been announced that they are going to be there. So check that out. And without further ado, cue the music, Brett.
Cueing it now.
Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
Hello, it's June 6th, 2017. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you guys like what you hear, please consider supporting the show on Patreon. Head over to theinnergamer.net and click the donate button to contribute. Now on to our video games. And first up, we played some more fighting games. It's exciting.
We did play fighting games, but before we even get into that, can I just say, guys?
Oh, no.
I bought a PC.
Oh, my gosh. You got a PC? Yeah, yeah.
Not like a legit desktop PC, but I bought a gaming laptop to use as a gaming system, but also as a productive system, because I need a new laptop because mine is 8 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I must say, I am so glad I'm on the train.
Welcome to the PC master race, my friend.
I mean, I don't really consider myself part of the master race
yet. Oh, give it time.
Or
too late.
Really, if I'm even going to be in that camp, but I do enjoy what my PC can do. It's like touchscreen and like 4K and stuff. It's super cool.
So what is... give us like two games that you played on it and how it felt.
Okay. Well, I haven't played FPS games on a PC since Return to Castle Wolfenstein in like 2001 or two.
Ooh,
I think that's when it came out. So I bought Modern Warfare 2, which is one of my favorite COD games, to focus like on getting better at FPS games. It's just as good as I remember, especially the story. You know, Ghost, Roach,
right.
Ramirez, everybody is just freaking awesome still. And even now, because... you know, it's such an old game and I have such a great laptop. Like, it's running at like 300 frames and 4K and it's freaking awesome. I'm just like, wow, this looks way better than I remember it. I'm like, this could possibly pass off as like a, you know, the first slew of next gen games, you know, like Shadowfall and stuff like that. Enjoyed that. And then, of course, WoW. I'm still playing WoW.
Oh my God.
And that's more of like a, I'm sitting down watching television or the game and I just put some WoW on and I just run some quests and that runs in 4K ultra extra, all that kind of stuff.
Like 10,000 FPS probably.
Yeah, so like 500,000.
Yeah.
But they only really focus on like character models and
right.
Like, you know, lighting and aliasing, that kind of stuff.
Man,
but
that's fascinating. That game's still going.
Dude, it's super fun still.
You got an OLED or...
Oh, yeah, that's right. So the laptop I got, Alien War 13 R3, I don't know if anyone knows what that means or whatever, but it's got a 1060, so a pretty good graphics card, 16 gigs of RAM, six gigabytes of dedicated VRAM, i7, and it's super lit, dude. It's got a touchscreen. Like I said, it's a 3K laptop, and it's super heavy, and I like it a lot, and I can't wait to keep playing, so let's hurry up and fucking do this.
All right. So I played on my Switch, actually, not my PC. I actually played on my PC a lot this week, but I'm going to talk about Switch, specifically Ultra Street Fighter II, The Final Challengers, which is the first official release fighting game that has been out on the Switch. They brought out the Neo Geo stuff, which were just like re-releases, essentially, but this is like a legit true-to-form kind of redo. Now, granted, it still has the retro feel of Street Fighter, but they've stepped up the graphics and brought it kind of a little bit more modernized and stuff like that, which looks really good on the Switch. I never played on the TV, actually. I just played on the go with this one. So that's...
Did you play by yourself?
Kind of what happens. Yeah, I played by myself. Actually, okay. No. Okay, I take that back. I played by myself. I played online, and I played by myself again. I didn't play online very long because I got slaughtered.
Oh, yeah.
Like, deathly slaughtered. Like, this guy, like, knew all these combos and stuff and just, like, blew my mind. I mean, I thought it was bad when I played against Devin, but this was just another thing. But yeah, so that's another story in itself. I'll write an article about that sometime. But so this game's really cool. I mean, it's neat to go back to Street Fighter. I used to play Street Fighter when I was a lot younger, and I haven't played one forever. I mean, it's been a very long time, 10 years probably, since I played a Street Fighter game. And very simple mechanics. You jump into it, you have just a menu, and you pick which mode you want to do. You have arcade, which is you basically play every character in the game until you die, and then when you die, it pops up with like a continue screen to like put more coins in, but you don't put coins in because it's the Switch.
But you could try, I guess, but
yeah,
probably break
you could
your
try
Switch.
Like see if you can like get it in the game cartridge slot or
I
something
don't know if
like
you
that.
Know, one of the many features of the Nintendo Switch is it doubles as a piggy bank.
Man, and that'd also, be so great.
Yeah, it'd be so insane. Collect
some
also,
money.
Mirror that screen, man, so reflective.
Yeah,
fucking Ultra Street Fighter.
But
last time I played Ultra Street Fighter was in a Pizza Hut waiting for my pizza when I was like 8 years old. And I was so bad at it. Plus, my joystick was broken, or so I said it was, because I was so bad at the damn game.
You were like, this thing's broken. I can't win.
It's the controller.
Yeah, I think I played it once at a CC's, and I never touched it after that because people were so good. I'm just like, I'm just going to watch.
It's one of those games that you mentioned that it's still like the old Street Fighter, but is it at least a little easier to jump in, seeing as though it is on the Switch?
So that is what's kind of cool about it, because there is, you know, you have, what, 4-8 buttons that you can use for actions on the Switch, and then you have your digital joystick or whatever. And, yeah, I mean, there's every button does something, and it has some kind of attack, whether it be high, medium, low, whatever. So I can, like, just sit there and press my ZL, ZR, my left and right, my A, B, and then what's the other ones? The X and Y, is that the other two buttons on there? Yeah. So I can press all those buttons, and all of them have a different type of moveset. And then you use, obviously, like kind of like Injustice, where you have to like combine a movement thing on the joystick plus use your series of buttons or whatever. And this one's less combo focused, I felt like, than Injustice, for example. Like Injustice is you have to know the combos to really excel. This one, I felt like I could do a little bit more button mashing and do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And make stuff sense. Happen.
My girlfriend kicked my ass when we did it. We played the demo at South By.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was just button mashing.
Oh,
I was like, Jesus, I can't do anything to you.
Yeah, like I found some moves. Like I kept like, I was playing, what's his name? Not Ryu. Ryu?
Ken.
Ken. No, not Ken. Well,
does he look like?
I played against Ken. He was like a karate dude. Had the
so Ryu?
Yeah, it probably was him.
Yeah, it's Ryu or Dark Ryu or whatever. The attitude.
No, it was Ryu.
It
was
like
Ryu. I was playing him, and he was my favorite character thus far. There was a Jamaican guy in there that kicked my ass.
Oh, he's good.
Yeah,
he
was hard to beat. So then I switched to him, and
Akuma's great.
Yeah. There's a lot of different characters in there. It's really a neat game. The price point's $39.99, so it's a little expensive, but I feel like if you're a Street Fighter fan, like you'll get a lot out of this game, because beyond arcade, they have versus mode, which is 1v1 against either other players, so you can use the same console and do 1v1, or you can do against a CPU. And then they have a buddy battle where it's 2v1 with two players playing against a computer or two CPUs playing against a computer.
I
like
that.
So you
like
swap.
That's cool.
You know, you can do that kind of mode. And then they have online, which is traditional. And it was easy to jump in online. I just like press online, and within 5 seconds, I was paired with somebody that destroyed me. So that worked out pretty well until he kicked my ass.
Damn it.
And then they have a Hadouken mode, which I never got to play, unfortunately.
Aww.
But it uses the Joy-Cons and motion controls. So you can do like cool Hadouken kind of movements with your hands and stuff.
That's so weird. Like, what is? I think it's like you actually fight the whole match in Hadouken mode.
I think so.
It's like first person, and you see your fists. And it's so weird. I don't,
it's like an arms thing.
I wish
you'd
played it, because I have no idea what that is and what the appeal of that is, I guess. Like, it's neat,
right?
But is there longevity to it? Like, do people primarily do that? Is it like in preparation for arms or something? Like, I have no idea.
I think it's just here's a Street Fighter game, and then we added this mode that makes it for the Switch kind of idea,
right?
But
which I think is kind of cool. I mean, you get a whole other game. It's not like you're just getting this game, the Hadouken mode,
right?
So
the only negatives I had was that, considering I never played Street Fighter on the Switch, they have a training mode that lets you just fight against a dummy that doesn't fight back, but they don't actually tell you what anything does. So I don't know yet to this day what A and B does in terms of, like, is it a high kick, low kick kind of thing? And I don't know what the triggers do. I just play with them until I find out. And then I see that, like, okay, this button does like a kick. This one does a kick too. This one does another kick. But I don't know. I didn't put enough time into, I guess, to see what the different moves were. But other than that, I mean, it's a small deal. And then the, you know, the animations are super cheesy because it's this old Japanese Street Fighter game, but it's a lot of fun. It's a cool thing. But on that note, I would consider it a delay simply because, I mean, I wanted to jump back into Injustice. There's a lot more content to explore there and a lot more. It's just a more modern game. This is something that if you want nostalgia for Street Fighter, get it and play it. Or if you just want a fighter game on your Switch to play with friends, like, this is a good thing to hold you over. But at that price point, unless you have a huge love for Street Fighter, I would wait till ARMS comes out and buy that instead, probably. Something
it's
like that.
It's $40, right?
Yeah, $40.
Okay, that seems a little steep, yeah. Especially because a game like this where there's no, like, dedicated story mode, and
right.
Like, I'm okay with paying that much for any other type of game, but for me, fighters need to be perfect. Like, they need to be like a perfect mix of accessible, look nice, and have that depth. At least in Injustice, you can create your own character, and there's a huge variety of different characters you can play with. But
right
at $40, that seems a little steep. Maybe at 30, I'd jump in.
Yeah,
and buy,
I say,
something like,
yeah,
this.
20 or 30, I think that would be the better way to go. So if it goes on sale, pick that up and check it out. But
yeah, at least it's a delay. Yeah. You at least recognize that there's potential in it, just not, yeah, at the price point. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. So, Austin, I'm going to let you talk about this next game since,
sweet,
you actually technically played it more, but then I'll jump in and add my 2 cents.
So I remember seeing this coming out early, or like the trailers and stuff. I was like, this looks so cool for VR. And obviously it wasn't a Vive. So I was like, well, I'm never going to get this game. And then just so happened that you had it. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. So the cool thing about this game is that you
now,
can just...
This is Robo Recall for, yes, the Oculus Rift that came out free with the touch controllers. So if you have Oculus touch controllers, it's a free game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got it for free.
Yeah.
Nice. So it's one of the best VR experiences that I've had besides ROM extraction. It's still kind of an experience, but it actually has like a story mode, and it has this weird 80s arcade feel to it, which really makes it its own game. And it, like I said, it's easy to jump into and just get the hang of and just go to town. And it's so smooth. It's so fluid. This is what more VR games need to be like. Do you agree, Brett?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so like the premise of this game is you're dropped in and you are a guy that is assigned to recall robots because the robots go rogue and start wanting to kill everybody, essentially. And they have this really cool introduction into the game where you're standing there watching.
Oh, you actually got to play it?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
I went back to the beginning.
Nice.
I was like, I'm going to start over. So you
start
out.
Wait, don't give it away. That's such a cool, like...
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you should give
it
away.
I think at this point there's not enough people that have VR. I think that this could be a good way to be
true.
Like, hey, like, you need a VR system,
okay,
to experience something like this. So, right, like, you are looking at a TV and they're talking about the robots that are starting to get, they're like possessed
being
by
hacked?
Like a virus or getting hacked,
yeah,
or something,
like that.
And then as you're sitting there, there's like a city of robots. So you're standing there and there's like these robots that they're talking about on TV that start coming up next to you and start standing up around you, and you're looking to your left and your right, and like these robots are like talking like, oh, I would never do this or blah blah blah, and they're like right here, like literally 2 feet away from you, and all of a sudden they like all turn red and like look at you and they're like something like attack, and
yeah,
they just attack you and the screen goes black, and I was like, holy shit, I almost fell on my chair, or standing, I almost fell down. It was scary. It was really scary.
Yeah, I never felt anything like that in a VR game.
Yeah, no, that was a like
not
a real
even the zombie
feel.
Game.
Yeah, no, it was so cool.
Or Arizona Sunshine.
But I mean, there's a lot of cool mechanics to this game. So the game Bullet Train came out right when the Oculus Touch controllers came out, and that was one that was being demoed a lot. This is from the creators of Bullet Train, and Bullet Train was like, this is our tech demo to showcase what we're eventually going to make, which is a full version game. And so in Bullet Train, you could like slow down time, and you could like grab bullets and like weapon projectiles in the air. They carry that on into this. So like later on in the game, you find like these rocket machines that come after you, and they shoot rockets at you. So you can like have a gun in one hand and then reach out with the other hand and grab a rocket and throw it back at an enemy.
Oh shit, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and like whenever like bullets and stuff come at you, you can like use your gun and just like whack them, and it turns the bullet around and throws it back at the enemy. So you can use the bullets coming at you, and it's always in this like pseudo bullet time mode that you can then go and attack them with. And I find that just like super cool to engage in this virtual world. It makes it so much more immersive than if you just had guns to like shoot at bad guys.
That's what makes it so fluid.
Yeah.
Like I've never played something so fluid. It made so much sense. And in discovering that in this game that you can actually whack away things with your gun, you know, like how, like they're coming at you and you're like, oh, I don't know what to do. Like, and you just shoot back, but then you realize, oh wait, I can actually grab this thing. You throw it at them and you just, someone shoots a shotgun at you and you like teleport, and oh man, it's great.
Yeah.
And you can grab the robots, you can rip their arms off, rip their heads off, you can rip their legs off and just beat other robots, or you can throw the other robot at other robots, and
it's like
it's mayhem, but
it's stupid fun and in the best possible way. Cause like you have four loadouts, so you can have, you eventually will unlock attachments for your gun. So you have a pistol, a revolver, a shotgun, and an energy rifle. And then I didn't realize this until like halfway through the game. I don't know if you did or not, but I missed the part where it mentioned that your heavy weapons are behind your back. So you have to reach behind your back to grab those guns, and then your pistols are on your side. So I played like three levels with just pistols, and I was like, I equipped a shotgun. Where's my shotgun at? And then I was like, they said something about behind my back. I reach behind my back and I have a shotgun in my hand. I was like, oh, damn it. I wish I knew that sooner. And, but I mean, there's just so many cool things there. Cause I had like a robot that was like jumping and leaping at me, and I'm shooting at this guy, and I go up and like grab the other one and then throw it at somebody else. Cause you just like grab anything in the world and just throw it back while doing something with your other hand. And it's crazy immersive. It's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Graphics great. Lighting's great. Man, I wish more VR games would take this kind of care. Which, I mean, it's Epic Games, so they have a shit ton of money.
Oh yeah, it is Epic Games that developed this, so it makes sense why they did it. But it's a great testament to what VR can be. Obviously, the story's kind of not hugely there, but they put enough in there to make it worth continuing to play. And I think it's great. I mean, if you don't have touch controllers for your Oculus, you need to get them and play this game because it feels so good. And it's a dig, by the way.
Yeah.
In case it wasn't clear.
I didn't get that from that at all.
Damn it.
Sounded like you hated it.
I know.
That's really terrible. Cool. I'm so glad that this game has that. The most gratifying mechanic I've ever felt in VR, which is drawing a gun from your sides or your back.
Yes.
The back is the coolest thing, dude. I did that in Farpoint, which I'll probably get for 2 weeks from now. Cast,
nice.
Yeah,
I'm excited to try that.
I wonder how they.
It's really cool
how they're going to deal with that, because your guns actually spawn on you. Like they get teleported to your side, so you can take out guns, shoot something, then drop them, do something with your hands, like, you know, get a robot, break them in half, and then pull out new guns that just spawn to your side. So
you just have like an unlimited arsenal of like weapons at your side that you can just like pull out and be like. Unleash it again, fire away. Yeah, it's, you can't see my hands, but I'm doing motions all over the place, and it's crazy. But anyway, Robo Recall, really cool game, exciting foray into the world of VR. Yeah. Louise, cool. You got anything else you want to chat about?
No, I bought, VR related, I bought the Rhombus of Ruin, which is the Psychonauts VR game on PlayStation.
Sick.
I didn't have a chance to play it. I was supposed to play it today. But I'm looking to get back into VR again. PlayStation VR titles are very limited, but they have some gems on there, and I'm excited to jump back into that, and maybe we'll play Bridge Crew pretty soon.
Yeah,
that'll be fun.
Yeah, I think so. Austin, you got anything else?
No, that's about it.
Cool. Well, that's going to wrap up our games this week. Stay tuned for some upcoming video game releases and gaming news. Break.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Welcome back, everybody, to the video game news segment of our podcast. We have a new month. It is June. It's an exciting, exciting month. And with that, we have the free games of the month for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. So there's actually a pretty interesting and good lineup I mean, as there has been a lot more lately, but there's a really good lineup this year. So PS4 this month. PS4 is going to have Killing Floor 2 and Life is Strange. Guys, Killing Floor 2, did any of you guys play this game?
I didn't play the first one.
Oh, you played the second one, though?
I haven't played any of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I played the first one, and it was very interesting, but buggy. And I heard this one is a lot better, but it's like zombie kind of death craziness shooter game, and it's really, really cool. But I think this will be fun to play free. It's like Left 4 Dead. So if you like Left 4 Dead, you'll like this game. Austin doesn't like Left 4 Dead. So
what?
I'm just kidding.
No, I do like Left 4 Dead.
I'm kidding. I'm just
kidding. I just don't
time.
Like this game.
Yeah. No, this game is pretty cool, though. And then Life is Strange is coming out, which there was some news that came out that said there might be a prequel in the works. So if you haven't played Life is Strange yet, which I haven't, you know.
It's actually really good. I played the first two episodes.
Oh, yeah?
Really good. It's really good.
Yeah, I want to jump into it. I hear fantastic things. It's a good kind of Telltale type of game story. And then Xbox One, we have some big, big titles. I'm going to save one for the end, but first I want to mention that you're going to get Watch Dogs, which is crazy. I mean, that's a huge game to play. Not very good, but it's a huge game to play. You're going to get Assassin's Creed 3, the full game, which if you haven't played that, that's actually a pretty good game in most places. Has some flaws, a little bit long, but it's worth playing.
Yeah, that one's 360 crossplay.
Yeah. And then Dragon Age Origins, which I think is also 360 crossplay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of these, like, I mean, Watch Dogs is like a huge title to have on the Xbox One proper, but
yeah,
3 and Origins, like all the 360 games they're bringing in, the fact that they're all backwards compatible is super great.
So
like, all
such
these
a good
games
idea.
Are like 8s and 9s. Like they're great games.
And last but not least, we have a game called Speedrunners, which is a multiplayer running game that has 4 players playing against each other locally and or online. You run, jump, swing around, and use devious weapons and pickups to knock opponents off screen. Louise, you've played this. Or have you?
I haven't played it. I've been wanting to play it. Okay. This is the exact type of game that I enjoy, which is just, you know, super wacky, fun, start to finish kind of thing. Like, it's basically a racing game, but you're just running around.
Yeah.
Which
and
is
it's
really,
a couch
really
co-op
cool.
kind of game, too, which is awesome.
Yeah, we saw this one. This was on the floor at PAX South. And it was always cool seeing it. It was right next to Ruiner.
I don't remember that.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, and people were going crazy over it. They also played it at the Twitch booth there.
Oh, maybe that's
I'm pretty sure you've seen it. Like it's just a side scrolling kind of. It reminds me of this game that came out. What's it called? It was like a free spy game or something like that. Counter Spy. There you go.
Okay.
It came out on the PlayStation in terms of like the art style, but these are the types of games that I think need to make a comeback. And this is a timely addition to a large and awesome Xbox One library of free games.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited to play it and jealous if your guys are going to get and play it.
Yeah, you might have to. I don't know. I want to get on the PC just because that's easier for me to couch co-op than the Xbox is, but this is free. So that's a pretty good selling point. And then on to our upcoming video game releases. We have none because... because whenever this podcast comes out a week after, we have E3, June 13th through 15th. And to make a note of that, on the week of E3, we will not be releasing a podcast. Instead, we will be posting a boatload of content to our social channels across the board. So make sure you guys are following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anywhere and everywhere that's social. We'll be on there posting all week long at E3 in LA. It's going to be amazing, but
it's going to be fun.
That's what's happening. So be prepared for a ton of video game announcements and releases and stories and stuff. We're all
going
too.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. All three of us are going super stoked.
Super legit.
Dude, we even got like a very, that Airbnb is super clutch, man.
Yeah,
super
that was
close
good.
To where need to be.
Good find.
Very good find.
Anyways, let's talk about some video game news. So earlier we talked about Louise got a new laptop. So that was cool.
A personal computer to play personal games and do personal things.
Man, it's so good. It makes me jealous.
It's awesome.
And on the PC news, we also have Intel has revealed their Core i9 and X series CPUs, which includes a 18 core version. So right now, like AMD has a 8 core, but Intel has announced 10, 12, 14, 16, and 18 core processors.
What? What?
And I just bought an i7. I should have waited.
You should have waited.
But these are like $1,000 and up. Yeah, so they're really
the
expensive.
The cheapest one is $1,000. It's ridiculous, which makes sense, at least at this point.
Right.
They're basically like, you want to try and compete? And then they just shit all over them.
You know, we were just talking about like how can they go up in you know, graphic card wise, and this thing could play 4K.
Yeah, but at the same time though, like there's no need for them to upgrade immensely. They probably could have done it a long time ago.
Right.
Oh yeah.
But the reason why they don't is because no one's competing with them. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's like Moore's law, like of like capacitors, which is basically this, like there's an exponentiating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the curve has been pretty steady for a while, and a lot of people think it's slowing down, but I actually think the opposite. Like, it's not slowing down. It's just the competition to do that has slowed down. So what's the point of following that law?
Right.
That said, these are insane. 18 cores. I think the one I have right now is a quad core. Like, that's it's pretty fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, we all have quad cores, I think, in our PCs, right. And it's still a beast of a machine. But
yeah, like, I don't see any reason why you need more than a quad.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing some kind of crazy like video editing, I guess.
Well, and
no boot time. Like you just kind of like you touch your computer and it's like, pow, I'm here. Let's do work.
You rang?
And the thing with this too, like with 18 cores, like you have to have applications that actually take advantage of the full 18 cores, and that's not going to come yet. But this is future proofing themselves. And basically now that the technology is here, now people are like, okay, let's jump ship and figure out how we can work on establishing new applications that take full advantage of this. So
they're gonna jump ship. Why would they jump ship?
Well, not jump ship. Jump on the ship.
Fuck all this. Let's just go over here.
Let's just screw it. But yeah, I'm excited. And they also said that there was one that got a clock speed of like, what was it, 5.7 gigahertz or something like
it
that.
It was ridiculous.
It was like 5+ gigahertz, which is crazy to me.
Because mine boost clock is like 4.4 maybe or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
I think the current i7s can go up to 3.8 turbo boosted. Otherwise, it's like standard 3.1 or 3.2 or something like that.
Wow.
That said, imagine in a very short time span, 18 cores is soon going to be 18 kilocores or one kilocore. And they're
it's
just
like
going to make like, yeah, exactly. Like it's going to be like gigacore. Like, oh my God, what are you going to do with this? Like,
I mean, eventually
3D print a car or something.
Shit. I mean, we're going to slowly move to nanotechnology where, you know, we can literally put the stuff in our eye and just control it with our minds.
Yeah, that's quantum shit. Like, quantum physics is insane. Like, there's, what's it called? Quantum computing, which is absolutely insane, which is literally at the molecular level.
Right.
That would be the next step, but I don't know to what extent this would have an effect on that.
I mean,
either way,
but
this is insane.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I have no idea. I'm not a physics man. I'm not
a
man of science. I wish I was, but I'm not a man of science. But
we're it doesn't man take of a video man of games.
Yeah, we're nerds.
Connoisseur. I think that's technology
in itself.
Well, speaking of not really men of science, but men of education.
Oh, nerdy stuff.
And there is a university in England.
In London.
London.
It's actually not in London, but it's in England.
Somewhere over there.
Based
over
in Europe.
Based out of the UK.
University.
University called Staffordshire University is going to be announcing a course that starts in September 2018 that is on esports.
Very cool. Esports is enormous. That I think only recently did that develop into $1 billion industry.
Which is weird.
Is absolutely incredible.
I mean, Luis, you follow it more than we do, but
absolutely.
I know people go and watch the stuff, and they have some pretty big tournaments here in America. But I feel like it hasn't really, I don't know, it's just kind of like, I guess, out of sight, out of mind type thing. But seeing this and seeing how gaming is really changing the social space and how people can actually, obviously, you can Twitch and make millions of dollars and become really, really famous. This is like, I mean, everything is changing. We really are at a cusp where the envelope has been pushed. So I'm excited to see what comes of this and, you know, what any millionaires can be made just by going to college and learning about esports. Like, shit.
What I find fascinating. Go ahead.
On the esports side, there are millionaires who play esports, especially in the Dota 2 and the League of Legends side of things. I think
true.
The highest paid esports player makes $2.5 million a year. So that's pretty damn good. That's more than WNBA players. Like, that's more than a lot of NBA players, which is pretty insane. But esports, I mean, think about the advertising potential. Like, that's a whole new slew of advertisers because it's a whole different crew of people. Like, think about all the people who watch basketball. Mm-hmm. There's probably a small percentage of people who watch basketball who also watch esports. So there's not, like, there's, it's a whole nother demographic that they're going for, which is just ripe for the taking. Like, Rocket League championships are going on right now. They have like 150, like peak 150 concurrent watchers from across the globe, which is pretty freaking awesome.
Right.
And then some of the bigger events get millions and millions of viewers, especially League of Legends and Dota 2 and games like that.
Blows my mind. It blows my mind. Like,
yeah, I'm glad that the whole course dedicated to it is coming out, especially on the business side of things. Because
that's what I was going to say. Is I like that they're, you know, it's not just training people to like get a career as an esports player, but it's also going to cover extensively on esports is a career path to get into, and you can look at it as a huge business opportunity to set up and create esports events and develop teams and grow communities and how to build fan bases around an esports type of event. And I think that's so interesting that they're cultivating a new generation of people that can basically take these skills in building these events, and then you can apply that to anything. I mean, if you can set up and grow an event and make it bring thousands and thousands of people into watching it and attending it, like, that's applicable to tons and tons of industries. So
it's exciting, dude, especially considering that this is, by all intents and purposes, a very specialized entrepreneurial class, which is already offered. So why not, you know, break that mold? Like, think about like SMU. They have a very competitive esports team, as also UT Arlington. Like, if they started to offer courses like this, probably not a degree. You probably don't want a degree right now in this, but knowing like, oh, I did a business finance degree, but I took, you know, 28 hours in, you know, dedicated entrepreneurial esports courses.
Right.
Like, that would be huge.
Oh,
especially
yeah.
if, like, think about all the casters who do stuff. Like, they do it all on their own. Like, they're just like Twitch streamers or just like anybody else who puts their own content out there. They have to develop themselves. They have to put their product out there themselves and see who bites. And it really does take a little bit of coaching, at least at this point, for people who are maybe 16, 17, 18 who want to go into this full time, that kind of stuff. So I'm glad that this is popping up and hopefully sets a precedent for people over here in the States where esports is really, really growing and quickly.
Well, you can no longer have your dad come in and say, you need to get off different video games. It's not going to do any good for you. Because now you can make money out of it.
Yeah, like, who would have thought? Who would have fucking
started a
thought?
Career industry around it? But it's really exciting. So on the note of business and video games, Valve, who manages the Steam platform on the PC, has announced the price for getting part of the Steam Direct platform, which is going to replace their Steam Greenlight that we talked about several podcasts ago. And there was a lot of speculation about how this was going to work, what it would cost. Will this be something that is just like, you know, the more money you have, the easier it is to get in and get exposure? Well, they have listened to the community, and because of community feedback, they have established a very low entry point for this. So whereas before, to get into the Steam Greenlight program and post the Steam Greenlight, you pay like $100 and then you could have published as many titles as you wanted. Now you have to pay $100 per title. So the barrier to entry is a little bit higher, but it's still priced low enough to where people that are brand new, that don't have a lot of money to spend on getting a title out there, can get onto Valve, get on here and get a game developed and published for $100. So you can't just have anybody willy-nilly throw something up there. There is a barrier to entry, but it's a low barrier to entry to keep it, you know, competitive and have a lot more people be able to jump in there.
I almost wish it was a little more.
Think so?
I think it should be too.
Because that's $100.
That's like, dude, I spent $100 like yesterday buying drinks like an idiot. And here I can spend $100 to put a game on there to potentially earn that $100 back like almost instantly. Like, there was a, I was listening to a podcast the other day. They talked about this game called I Am Mayo, I think is what it is.
Okay.
It's a 99-cent game where all you do is click the top of a jar of mayo.
Hell yeah.
And someone got that on Steam and made like $1 million. Like that 99 cents, a million curious people who say the same exact thing. Oh, it's just 99 cents. And he only had to pay $100 to get his game up there? Like, come on. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be some sort of filter, and whether or not this is going to be that filter, probably not. $100, like, that's kind of ridiculous. I do like that they're at least taking steps in that direction, and Steam doesn't want to cut out the person who maybe can't really afford $100. But at the same time, like, how big of a percentage is that? And is that percentage that consequential? Like, at least make it, like, 500 or like $1,000, so that way someone does go in and has to really think about whether or not this game is something that they want to, you know, put out there and expect people to, you know, play and purchase.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the way it's set up now is great that, you know, anyone can get out there and, you know, like that guy made this, you know, in my opinion, really shitty game, is able to get rich, which is what we want, obviously. But, you know, with Steam being so flooded with content, it's just, you know, we need some way of filtering all that out, like you said, Luis. It's just too much.
Yeah.
And especially for us who've been on Steam for God knows how long.
Forever. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I like that it's not, you know, you can just jump in there and just throw a bunch of stuff on there. Like, there is a little bit of a price point, but I see the argument of, like, you know, it could be a little bit higher to make it people that are more dedicated into this realm. But I'm hoping maybe they have some kind of like review process, kind of like, because with iPhone, if you want to publish an iOS application, you pay $100 a year to get into the program, and then you can publish as many apps as you want, but they have to be approved and tested by Apple's team. So they go through and process that before it gets published. So if you have any, like, they know if you have bugs, because I published an app one time to the App Store and they rejected it because they identified a bug in the software, and they were like, this doesn't work, you can't do this until you fix it. So if they had something like that, which I hope they do, I know they mentioned that they're going to do some kind of they have a system in here where it's going to make it present more valid games to you than it does now. So that's part of it, but hopefully they have some kind of review process too that they might consider down the line. So anyway, that's that one. Let's talk about some more Steam stuff, which we'll go quick on this one. But Neil Blomkamp, which is the guy that did District 9 and Elysium, the movies that you guys may or may not have seen or heard of, he is working on a studio that is going to be releasing short experimental films that'll be exclusively on Steam. So
I think this is awesome.
This is very interesting. Steam is trying to now, those that don't know, Steam does have movies you can get on its platform. It's known for games, but they do have movies that you can get off of there. But now they're trying to venture out further into releasing content that may be relevant to their fan base. I don't know. How do you guys feel about this?
Hell yeah. More power to them. I mean, I think
it's a huge platform. Like, why not take advantage of it?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they had Kung Fury that was on Steam for a while. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was free at the time when I saw it. I don't remember how I saw it, but I think you can buy it on there. I don't know. I forgot how they did that, but I mean, it's cool that you can just, I was on there one day and I was like, oh shit, there's a movie on here, you know, and it was a good movie too. So, I mean,
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I think there's potential in a platform like this. I mean, why not? You're in the hands of millions of people. Like, probably more than, I mean, to the extent that Netflix is, like, you have Steam and you have Netflix, you have Hulu. Like, why not take advantage? Maybe not so much. I mean, Valve probably does have a whole bunch of cash, although they probably aren't going to go the Netflix route and actually produce stuff. But at the same time, like, if, you know, for example, the book, what's the book about? I just bought it. I don't even have it here. Basically, any video game type rendition of a movie, like, if, for example, Uncharted was not picked up by Fox or whoever it was picked up by, maybe Steam just steps in and says, all right, we'll give you guys the money, go make the movie, and we'll put it on our platform.
Right.
That automatically puts it in front of 20, 30, 40, 50 million people.
Right.
Instantly. So why not take advantage? And especially a director like this who does have a track record of making really cool sci-fi type shit, like, why not? It's pretty exciting. I don't know what exactly the growth potential is of something like this. It seems like it's there, but to what extent are the demographic of men, women, and essentially children on Steam. Are they really going to want this?
Maybe we'll start seeing some actual decent, good video game movies or TV shows that come on this platform, because Steam knows that people want good video game movies.
I mean, I think that's what Machinima was trying to do originally, but I don't think they have their content hasn't been up to par, at least in my opinion. So we'll see. Maybe this will be like a green light for independent filmmakers or something.
Yeah,
it's true.
Awesome.
It's also, I mean, also think about like Achievement Unlocked with Rooster Teeth,
right,
or some of those other shows. Like, yeah, they do it all themselves and they have their following, but if they were to just say, hey, we're going to do this and put it on Steam, like Steam Video or whatever it's called, I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they automatically get that exposure. So maybe that is the route that, Steam decides to take and sort of steal that away from Netflix and Hulu if they ever thought to go and do that.
Cool. So our next story is on a new game that's coming out July 25th called Pyre. This is from Supergiant Games, the creators of Bastion and Transistor. And this game piqued my interest because it's trying to, one, it's from the guys that did Transition and Bastion. So that's awesome. Both of those games were really good. But what's interesting about this is that they're trying to build a game that has a branching story with no game over of any kind. And that to me is very interesting. So you're never forced to lose progress. So whether you win or fail, you continue your journey. And the interactive narrative is told through a story that should feel personal to you, but no two players will ever experience it in quite the same way. So, I mean, this is a tall order for a game to say there is no end game to this game and everything you experience will be different. But
yeah, what is that?
That's what they're,
that just blows my mind.
They're pitching.
Art style looks great. I mean, if that really pans out the way it does, I mean, this could be for a very special game that, you know, you don't get very often.
Yeah. It's a party-based RPG, so you can have three players that are playing in a isometric kind of view as they do with games like Transistor and things like that. You have a lot of different characters that you can fight against. And then everyone in the game has a unique story behind their exile and their own reasons for wanting to return in this world that they've created. And the battle system's been totally revamped, or it's a brand new battle system that's going to be 3v3. And then it's a competition called the Rites, and each rite plays out like an intense close quarters mystical battle where the object is to extinguish your adversary's signal flame before they can do the same to you. So you have to outsmart and outmaneuver your opponents to succeed, or you can banish them outright with a powerful aura blast. So a lot of cool things come into this game. It looks pretty, and it's from guys that have a very good track record.
Yeah, their games are fantastic. This sounds, I haven't looked much into it. I just know it's kind of MOBA-esque, but I like the fact that it's three players because there's a lot of accountability involved with this. It's like the same thing that makes Rocket League so great.
Right.
Is the small team, very tight-knit group of fellas. It just makes sense, and it also sounds like League of Legends-ish with the whole extinguishing the flame and getting over to their side and kind of doing damage on that front. And the from what I remember of the screenshots that I've seen, the battlefield seems very small, which means games will probably be very quick or involve multiple rounds, which I also like because that gives you the potential to, you know, do something new and crazy, and it also gives like the buzzer beater potential or, you know, reverse sweeps and those kinds of things, which really prepare it for it in a lot of ways, an esports following, which would be really cool if it did get that traction.
Yeah,
definitely. So I'm excited. I think it'll be interesting. So that's July 25th. That'll be a nice summer game to check out and hopefully see what happens. Last week we talked about Electronic Arts and what they are expected to announce at E3. Well, they've saved some of that for us and came out and announced their next Need for Speed game called Need for Speed Payback. And the trailer is a story trailer that basically reminds me of Fast and the Furious, except in a video game. And I don't know how I feel about it. It's weird.
The reason why this is weird, Need for Speed came after Burnout, and so I'm always just kind of like, why? I think like some of the Need for Speed games are like really good. Like Need for Speed Underground is one of the best games like ever. Like,
oh, I love that game.
Yeah. It's such a good racing game.
Right.
That said, like, I've never really been a big fan of the Need for Speed franchise. Like, I don't really think, I mean, it's kind of good for EA to be going this route only because there is no arcadey driving game out right now. Everything is like Forza Horizon 3 and Forza Motorsport 6 pretty soon, and now Gran Turismo Sport. They have like Trackmania Turbo and all these other, you know, Dirt 4, that kind of stuff. But right. Need for Speed Payback might be coming into a niche that isn't sort of being taken over right now, which is good for EA, but I'm not necessarily sure I'm going to want to jump into a Need for Speed again.
Yeah. It's hard with Need for Speed because, I mean, I've been playing Need for Speed since I think Need for Speed 2 or 3 came out way, way back in the day, and it's evolved in so many ways. And it used to be just a standard racing game where you race fancy, expensive cars, but very arcadey. And then they went into the street car kind of realm with Need for Speed Underground, Need for Speed Underground 2. Before that, they always had like the cop chase sequence that went down where you could play a cop or you could play a racer. And they did a spinoff of that in a lot of different titles and tried to make that happen with Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, Hot Pursuit 2, all that. And this game is saying that, like, they've never really had a story-driven game that was worth getting into that I've played. I play it for the racing exclusively, just like having fun racing cool cars. And then when they added customization, it added even more fun to it. But with Payback, like, we'll have to see what the game looks like. We'll see what the gameplay feels like. But in terms of a story, I don't know if this game needs a story. And they're trying really hard to put a story in here. And I don't know if I feel like they're kind of wasting time with this, telling a racing story. So
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll
see. I don't know, man. There's 9 Fast and Furious movies. Like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, there is a market for that, I suppose. So maybe they'll, I mean, if they can make it like Fast and the Furious, like, I love the Fast and Furious movies. If they can make it like that, to that level of blockbuster nonsense, that could be cool. But when I saw the story for the last Need for Speed game where they did the FMV kind of stuff, it didn't sell me too much. So
right.
We'll see what happens. But last but not least, we have a worth mentioning story that, Austin, I'll let you talk about this one.
All right.
Because you found it online and thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. So the title is, I paid women to play Overwatch with me and it was fantastic. So not only can you go and watch, you know, women on Twitch and stuff like that, if that's your thing, you can watch anyone on Twitch, but now you can pay a girl to play with you. And apparently these girls that are on Fiverr,
yeah,
are really good and they actually can help you get better at Overwatch. So I thought it was a weird dynamic and something that I haven't seen before. And I'm sure this is going to continue to grow, but I thought it was a really interesting article and how the times are changing. So go over to Kotaku if you want to read it and learn more about it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
The world we live in now.
Fiverr is interesting because I get people at my job, because I build websites and stuff. I get people that contact me and say, I paid $5 for somebody to optimize my website for showing up on search engines. And then can you like take over what they did? And then I find out that they completely botched their website and destroyed everything that we worked so hard to get them to. And it's terrible. So like Fiverr is a dangerous site where you can get like really good stuff and then really bad stuff. So it's interesting to me to see like this kind of thing coming out and that people are only charging $5 to coach and stuff like that. But it's a weird sign of the times. That's for sure. But yeah, so that ends our news segment this week. If we missed anything, let us know at theinnergamer.net. And this week's discussion is going to be on our final component of E3 predictions with Nintendo and Ubisoft. So everybody, stay tuned. We'll be back with our discussion on Nintendo and Ubisoft at E3.
Mm, yeah.
Hells yeah.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
And welcome back, everybody, to the final segment of our podcast. Today, we're going to talk about our final part of our E3 predictions series. Today, we're going to talk about the Nintendo and Ubisoft as a publisher.
Did you just call it the Nintendo? You sound like Nintendo. My mother.
It's the Nintendo, not a Nintendo.
Playing with your Game Boy? I'm like, Mom, Game Boy hasn't existed since 88. Like, what's your problem?
That's pretty funny, actually. So
since 88.
E3 is coming up very soon, and Ubisoft is going to have their press conference on Monday, June 12th, and Nintendo will have theirs Tuesday, June 13th, to kind of wrap up all the press conferences of that week, and then we'll get to play some amazing, awesome games. So let's jump into the Switch, guys. The Switch has been out since March. We have one. Everybody has one. I think it's pretty much across the board that we love it.
Not everyone has one. Apparently, it's still in high demand across the board.
Well, everybody that is on the podcast.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, everyone that matters. You know, no one else matters except
sorry,
us.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
And my girlfriend.
You're definitely right. They're shooting for 22 million by the end of the year. 22,000? Yeah. Damn. It feels like there's only 22,000 out there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It does. It really does.
But the Switch has gotten a lot of, not a lot, but a little bit of flack for a slow games launch, kind of a minimal lineup. They were like, oh, the only thing that's out there is Zelda and that's it. So why would I want to buy a Switch? We think otherwise. There's been a lot of games that we purchased and played and really enjoyed. But E3 has the potential for Nintendo to really show up and bring some new exciting launch titles but just first party titles and a lot of other things that we would like to see in here that will entice people to purchase now that most people other than myself have beaten Zelda in some form or fashion and are ready for another game to come out.
Bro, you haven't beaten Zelda.
I know. I haven't. Yeah. Most people, except for me.
Even Luis has it, and he's like,
I know,
addicted
crazy.
To it.
But
yeah, I'm taking my sweet time with it.
Hell yeah. So let's first talk about the subscription, because yesterday, which by the time you guys listen to this podcast will be like 4 days ago, they came out and announced Nintendo Online, their subscription service. Which,
yeah, how do we not have that in the news section? That's ridiculous.
Well, I moved it down here because we're going to talk about it in the Switch conversation.
No, you forgot.
No. It's in here. It's right there. It's linked in the doc.
I see it.
I'm just kidding. So Switch is going to... It's going to be a service that's $20 a year. So it's like way cheaper than everything else.
And no, there's a 5, there's an 8, and a 20.
Right.
$20 for a full year.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, no brainer, full year. Let's just make it happen.
$20.
It's like, that's nothing. It's awesome.
Isn't it 50 for PlayStation and 60
like
for Xbox?
60 for all of them, I think. Okay. Isn't it? Maybe it is 50 for PlayStation. I don't know. I just have it auto.
Yeah, I know, right? Me too. I don't even know anymore. Just
but,
take my money.
It's interesting because there was a lot of rumors out there whenever they came out and said this is an online service. People were complaining. They were like, well, I don't want to pay $50 for just to be able to play online. So they listen and they came out and
surprisingly,
said... Surprisingly.
Just like this article states, Nintendo never listens. They just like, well, we're going to do our thing.
And now they did. And it's $20. And not only is it $20 to play online and to have friends and stuff like that, which I still don't like the whole use an app to... connect to parties and things like that.
We'll get to that.
But they did announce that this is going to come with their classic game service, which means that it's not going to be one game a month like they originally stated. Now they've decided that you will have access to a classic games library as long as you're a subscriber. Hell
nice.
Yeah.
So, divvy up, guys. I called it. Give me your money.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
High five.
Thanks.
So, yeah, I mean, this is really cool. They're going to have games like Super Mario Brothers 3, Dr. Mario, a whole bunch of other NES, probably any SNES titles that will be available in a library. They're obviously going to rotate them out like Netflix does, but this will be part of your subscription. So that's really exciting. So what do you guys, how do you guys feel about that? You pretty pumped? You going to subscribe whenever it comes out?
Yeah,
probably. I don't know what like the library is going to look like. They have to port all of them, which is going to take a little bit of time, especially adding online functionality to each game, which I don't think we mentioned yet. There's going to be online functionality for each classic game.
Yeah.
Starting out with just NES games and then eventually Super NES games, which is probably what most people want because the Super NES is probably one of the best, if not the best console of all time, in my opinion. That said, I don't know what this means for Virtual Console. They said that these are not the same thing, but that also takes out two enormous libraries of games that would normally have been on the Virtual Console. So now, if you want to play those games, you can't just purchase the ones that you want. well, at least this is how I'm imagining it. If these games are on the service, why would I want to
buy them?
Yeah. Right. I mean, I guess you could, but at the same time, why not just give me the option for both? It makes sense to give them both, but at the same time, it doesn't make sense. So yeah, I don't know how they're going to, travel this line. Will this classic game service actually be just classic games? What's considered classic? Is N64 considered classic at this point? Is GameCube considered classic? I mean, those are consoles ago. It's almost 15 years ago that the GameCube came out. It's pretty insane. Actually, I think it was 15 years ago that the GameCube came out.
That's awesome and crazy.
It's insane, man.
Yeah. Gaming.
I super enjoy this announcement. $20 to play unlimited classic games. Granted, they may not be the greatest classic games. They might be pretty good, but not the best of the best. I still think that's freaking awesome.
That's a great price point. And then it allows you to play online. I mean, I'm fine with doing that. And then the added benefit of you also get some games with it. So
right.
That'll be really, really cool. That's less than... That's nothing. A couple dollars.
They're almost on point with PlayStation and the way that how games are coming to their console. When before there's five games and it's well, what the hell?
Yeah.
And now it potentially could be hundreds of games.
I honestly think they might be shooting themselves in the foot a little bit by just keeping it at $20, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because think about it, if this Netflix classic game service really is as robust as an actual Netflix with hundreds of titles eventually, then fuck, they're shooting themselves in the foot. Make it $30, $40. PlayStation is giving you free games, but I mean, some of the free games are terrible, except for obviously this month
right.
with Killing Floor 2 and Life is Strange. But still, why? Yeah, you build extremely goodwill, but at this point, Nintendo needs to be banking on stuff like this. $20 is amazing for us. And I think we should be willing to at least pay up to 30 for something like this, if it's how we're all thinking it's going to be.
Yeah.
We'll know more on June 12th, but...
Heck yeah.
But it's, initial reaction is awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I mean, I would definitely pay $30 too, but these are all really old games at this point that obviously it's going to take some time to port them over, and I'm sure it's going to, it's going to cost some money, but I don't know.
I'm assuming that they're going to stick with the classic games, and then if you want any of the more recent mid-range titles, the ones that were all 3D and things of that nature, that's probably going to be, you have a virtual console, you pay per title, or maybe they'll have a higher tier subscription service to have access to GameCube and
hoping.
Things like that. I would pay $40 even. I don't do that, Nintendo, but I would pay $40 a year to have, GameCube and 64 and NES and SNES and play all those games. I think that'd be off the chain, so.
Maybe we'll learn more at E3, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But other than that, I mean, Switch this year is all about the games. We got Super Mario Odyssey coming out. Hoping we get a release date for that. That will be playable at the E3 conference, so you will be able to play Super Mario Odyssey. Super Splatoon 2 is coming out soon. We have ARMS coming out that Friday after E3 is over, so that's cool. Xenoblade Chronicles 2, hopefully we'll see something about that.
That series.
Yeah.
Yeah, that series should be very, very robust on the Switch. It's just a good game.
Right. And then we got Fire Emblem, which, they've been doing a ton of Fire Emblem games lately. And I've never played a lot of Fire Emblem. I played the one that came out on the iPhone not too long ago. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I haven't played much of it. But
they're good games, but they've really saturated the 3DS market. They have four.
Yeah, didn't they bring out two or three at the same time? Almost? Yeah.
Like Birthright and Fates and all those. Those are all fantastic games. And then they just released another one, Fire Emblem. I forgot what this one's called.
The Heroes?
Actually, I think it might be Heroes. But it's a remake of an older Fire Emblem title. That said, Fire Emblem Warriors is not a traditional Fire Emblem. It's like Hyrule Warriors. It's Dynasty Warriors, basically. So it's hordes of enemies, and you're just slashing and hacking and slashing.
Yeah.
So it's not a traditional Fire Emblem game, which is cool.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be a one-of-a-kind game on the Switch right now. So I'm kind of excited for that one.
So what games do you guys want to see come out? First, let's talk first-party titles first. We have Super Mario... We have talks of Xenoblade, Fire Emblem, stuff like that. What other games are you hoping to see get announced here?
I mean, I think it's hands down. I think we will see it. It's going to be Super Smash, because the reason why I bought this console was so I could play with my friends super easily. And I got Smash for my 3DS XL, and I quickly sold that so I can get the Nintendo Switch that I have right now. And I want that. I remember playing Super Smash on N64 and GameCube and being amazing. And so I want that experience again. And then we can have it at our meetups. We can play that with other people. It's going to be, it's going to be a blast. Like, they're going to announce it.
Yeah, I hope so too. Don't know what kind of package it's going to be. But hopefully it's like, hey, this is Super Smash Deluxe, and then it includes every character and new stages and stuff like that.
Like, what if they announced it, and then, like, the next day you could buy it?
Dude, that'd be sick.
I mean, just throw it on the download store.
Right? Yeah. Be like, hey, guess what? Super Smash available today. Drop everything and go buy it. That'd be bad, though, because ARMS is coming out, like, that week after, so, or that day.
And Splatoon. I guess we would have to wait a little bit.
I could see it being a fall release. I mean, imagine if Smash came out amongst like all the other games. Like, honestly, like with Destiny coming out and Battlefront and all that stuff, Smash might garner even more attention than those games in a weird way, even though they're a lot bigger games. But Smash would be like, people would lose their shit, especially if it's a brand new Smash title.
Oh, yeah. No, it'll probably be like a deluxe, just like Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, I think it'll come out next year for sure.
Yeah.
Because they already have Odyssey coming out in that window. And there is no indication that Super Mario Odyssey is not going to be like a 9.5 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10. The last Galaxy games were. Like, the Galaxy games were incredible. Like, this is another mainline Super Mario 3D platformer, which, I mean, I am just super stoked for. Like, you already said there's going to be a demo there.
Yeah.
It, like, the game of the year this year might just be a toss-up between Breath of the Wild and Super Mario Odyssey. Like, never have we had, like, we're so fortunate to have this problem. And that isn't even on top of other announcements that Nintendo might make. Like, for example, Metroid. I think the Nintendo Switch console is, like, the most, I say bandwagon, but, like, the dedicated fans of Nintendo own a Nintendo Switch, and they really want a Metroid game. So my hope is that at the very end of their treehouse, or whatever the hell they do, they just have, like, an announcement. Like, some very vague trailer, and then it just, the Metroid logo pops up without even saying the word Metroid. And then it's just like, you know, in development or some shit like that. Because that would be super, super amazing.
How long has it been since they actually developed one?
The Prime series, it was Metroid Prime, Metroid Echoes, I think 2006 or 7, since one of those types of Metroid games came out.
That was on the Cube, wasn't it?
Yep.
Okay.
That's crazy.
They may have had one on the Wii or like a port of the ones from the GameCube, but they need to do something like that.
Right. I'd be excited for that.
They'll also do mobile stuff. Animal Crossing Mobile is probably the greatest idea ever, if it is exactly what I'm thinking, because Animal Crossing is all about playing with other players and visiting other people's towns. So my super, super hope is that Animal Crossing makes an appearance, not just for the Switch, but for mobile phones.
Yeah.
Because think about this, like if I pass by you in a mall and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going about my town, and then I go and check my mailbox and, you know, someone who was right next to me sent me an invite and they're like, hey, come visit my town, and you can go visit somebody's town because they're right next to you and you can go and...
No, you'd have to play Animal Crossing. You'd have to swap game codes because, you know, friend codes. Like that's,
that's trash.
Yeah, that's right.
You'd have to have business cards in your hand and be like, here's my friend code, add me real quick.
Oh, we should add that to our E3 business cards, our friend codes.
That's pretty
do
funny.
It
right
do
why
it.
Not
yeah
that said I think those would be really cool. They also Zelda Mobile, I don't know what the fuck that's gonna be, but
yeah, it's probably really weird,
like a card game or something stupid.
So I posted this question to Reddit, as I've been doing in previous discussions, and I got a lot of responses from people and mentioned that, you know, they did come out and say that Animal Crossing is coming out at some form this year, and then after that they're going to bring Zelda to mobile phones. And the reaction was pretty negative. Nobody wants Zelda on mobile, so I don't know what that's going to end up becoming.
I wonder why.
I don't know. It's just a weird thing, but we'll see what happens. But a lot of people were excited about Monster Hunter XX. They have that edition that they announced, the special bundle edition. There is some comments. A lot of people, I had two or three people that mentioned they want to see the Dark Souls trilogy come to Switch. They did announce that From Software is going to be on the Switch at some point. So that could be an interesting announcement, not a bombshell announcement, I don't think, but it'll be an interesting announcement if they do say that, hey, Dark Souls is going to be available on the Switch coming soon. I know Devin would eat that up for sure.
I mean, he's coming in his pants right now.
Yeah, just totally. Listen to us. Yeah. So I've read a lot of people are kind of apprehensive about Metroid coming out, but I think that this would be a good time to announce it and bring that out there. But what about Pokemon? Do you guys think we'll see anything from Pokemon at all? I mean, we just had Sun and Moon come out. Do you think they'll bring something in regards to the Pokemon games here at E3?
I don't see why they wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean,
there was a new Pokemon game supposed to be coming out soon, and I forgot what it was called. It was just mentioned, or someone saw an ad for it in Japan.
I think it's like Stars or something like that.
Yeah. What is that? Somebody mentioned that here.
I have no idea, but I don't think they should bring it to E3, actually, because they already have ARMS and Splatoon and Super Mario Odyssey. Like, it doesn't make sense to bring in another game into that fold if they don't have to. Because Pokemon is one of those series that you can just be like, oh, it's Tuesday, and I think we're going to announce Pokemon today. And then they just announce it, and then everyone freaks out again. So why not do that around, I don't know, August or October or maybe January or something like that? It doesn't make any sense. Maybe like a Tokyo Game Show or PAX or something like that. It doesn't make any sense, and it's not really a Nintendo style to just announce so much shit all at once, especially when they don't need to. Like, why not ride that wave? Because think about this. If they do announce Metroid this year and they're like, ooh, teaser, and then January comes around and they're like, oh, Nintendo Direct, we're going to talk about Metroid and a new game, and then boom, Pokemon. So then they have two things to look forward to for the rest of the year, and they just keep doing kind of that bit.
Yeah.
Although I do want them to have a new Pokemon on the Switch. I think it'd be awesome. But I don't think they should go all in on it now. Doesn't make much sense, business sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm gonna come out and say now, I'm going to throw out one of my crazy predictions and say that we will not see Metroid. I think we are going to see some form of Pokemon.
I hate you, bro.
I think we will see an Animal Crossing, and I think we will see Super Smash. And I think Super Smash is going to come out this year. That's my predictions.
Dang, no Metroid?
There we go.
I think the no Metroid makes sense, but the Smash this year is stupid.
Yeah. That's okay.
Doesn't make it not like okay. As a prediction, but it doesn't make sense for Nintendo to be like, we're going to release Smash this year.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they have ARMS, they have Splatoon, then they have Super Mario. They don't need another game.
Yeah.
All of those will sell.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, you want a lot of people to have a Switch already before Smash comes out.
True. I don't know.
I think that's a January game, dude. That's an easy, like, oh, we're going to release it whenever the hell we want.
It could definitely be a spring. Or
what's coming
or
out in
early
the fall?
2018
Super
title.
Mario Odyssey.
Super Mario Odyssey, definitely. Hopefully, Animal Crossing.
I mean, it seems like every month, like
Monster
when,
Hunter.
When is Super Mario Odyssey like actual date? Is it dated?
No, not okay. Yet. That's what we're hoping for at E3.
So I can see that coming out in like November. Then maybe Smash comes out in December. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Luis is probably right. I think the Smash could be something that gets put. I mean, imagine if like 2018 opened up and it's like, hey guys, welcome to 2018. You get Super Smash Brothers and Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, that's like the equivalent of like Neo and Horizon Zero Dawn for me.
Super Smash is awesome, but it's going to be like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Like, it's just going to be a rehash of the same thing just for the Switch. So. It's big, but it's not big.
I could see a new one.
You know?
I could see a new one. I don't know.
I think it's going to be deluxe.
Yeah.
Which I'm cool with. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be pumped for it.
We didn't mention Mario Party. Mario Party. What do you think about that?
That would be a nice little surprise.
Yeah, I think that would be a cool like filler game to announce. Also, we know for a fact we're going to hear more about that Super Mario Rabbids game because of the leak.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. Mario Party would be freaking awesome. Like that, I think we talked a little bit about it before we even jumped into the cast, but using the motion controls for a Mario Party game would be super awesome.
It would be a good version of 1-2 Switch.
Oh, yeah. That not even, like, no joke. Maybe it becomes a game that everyone decides to buy with the Switch. That said, I also think WarioWare might need to make an appearance at least at some point because that's a mega party game.
Right.
In fact, there's a game called WarioWare Mega Party Games, which is kind of funny.
Right.
Yeah, I think Nintendo's got a lot going on. They also have the 3DS, which I think will just have some other random games coming to it. Obviously, Fire Emblem just released on it, and that's selling well. They can't just completely ignore the 3DS.
Yes, if they announce a brand new piece of hardware, they need to do something with it. But I don't see. I definitely see Switch being the main, the by far main focus of this.
Oh, absolutely. The new 2DS does look pretty damn good, though. I hope that there's some playable.
Oh
ones
yeah,
there,
I said 3DS. I meant 2DS. The 2DS XL. But yeah, let's that's Nintendo. So a lot of good stuff happening for Nintendo this year. Hopefully they surprise us and blow our minds. But let's move on to Ubisoft. Starting with Ubisoft, they've changed their logo. Brand new rebrand. First time in, I think, 13 or 14 years that they've changed their logo. This one, to me, is interesting because it comes timely in the wake of E3 and that they have a lot of new game titles coming out and they're trying to like change their image a little bit. We talked about Far Cry 5 last year, so we won't draw on this, but I could see them. They've already said that this is coming out in 2018, so I'm sure we'll see some more gameplay for Far Cry 5, but this won't be like the focus of the show. I'm seeing Assassin's Creed being a huge focus on this show. How do you guys feel?
I go with that, yeah. We haven't heard much about it. Now's the time to start, you know, ramping it up.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of leaks coming out on it as of late. There's been rumors about what the character looks like, the protagonist. There is more rumors that solidify the fact that it's probably going to be set in Egypt. Yeah, I think we're going to see a big reveal of this game at E3. And then South Park. We'll probably see something from the Fractured Butthole.
Hell
I don't
yeah.
want to see a whole lot. I mean,
I want it so bad.
We just need to bring it
it's
out.
It's coming out in January, right? Or February?
October.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it got delayed. Or was it delayed this year?
It was delayed last year from December to March, and then that got delayed to indefinite, and then now it's, I think it's October 17th.
Yeah.
It might actually be November, but
they come out. It's delayed again.
I hope they just come out and like just show, oh, look, there's more classes. Like these are the classes that you can go through.
We haven't seen much of the classes, but we have, but not to a full extent. So maybe they'll show us how the character creation works more and things of that nature, but that'll be cool. We're going to get the Crew 2. So we've talked about that. I'm hoping this is actually a good game. The last one had a really good premise for it. Like you can travel across the entire United States, but it was really isolated to select regions and it was very flat in its delivery. There wasn't much to it. I know you guys aren't big racing game people, but I want this to be really good. That could compare to Need for Speed. So that could be a competitor to Need for Speed. So that'll be an interesting fight. And then if Forza comes out, like we could have three big racing titles this year that will be up against each other, vying for the attention. But I mean, Forza is probably going to beat them all down, but that's just me.
And then Gran Turismo too, damn.
Oh yeah, that's right. Gran Turismo. So let's talk about now, since we talked about the Switch, let's talk about Ubisoft's presence on the Switch. We know Skyrim is coming. Which isn't Ubisoft, but that's part of it.
Right.
We know Steep is coming to the Switch, and then I've heard Rayman Legends is going to come.
Yeah, that should come. That game is perfect for the Switch, and it's beautiful. It's old, but it's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
That game was on the Wii U. I played it there. It is just the most ultimate side-scrolling platformer I've ever played. It's also like somewhat rhythm-based, so you play the game, and if you play it correctly and on beat every time, like you jump correctly or you do this correctly, like the background music follows you. And so it makes you want to play the game and better. Like that's the whole point of platforming anyway, is to do it super fluidly and have no interruptions. So that game would be great on the Switch. And then of course, I just mentioned Rabbids, which is a Ubisoft property. And that's actually part Rayman.
Okay.
And Mario. Like I don't know what it's going to be. It's probably what would be considered a Mario Party game. That's what it looks like, at least. I don't know what the title was, but there was a leak.
Wait, for
something
Ubisoft?
Like 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Rabbids is them. That's Rayman.
Yeah, but you said Mario.
Yeah, it's Mario. Yeah, it's a mix. I told you, I just mentioned this.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned it. I just didn't put two and two together that's what that was.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's like, all right, guys, you got to educate yourselves a little bit more, man. These games have been around forever. Let me see if I can get it to
pop. Yeah, I know Rabbids, but it's really bad. I just never appealed to me. I just saw the leak today.
Yeah, it's Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle is what it's called. So I don't know what exactly it is, but that leaked a long time ago, and that's probably what's going to be there at E3.
Interesting.
Sort of realm of things, but.
So it's like a Puyo Puyo Tetris, but with Rabbids and Mario.
Well, probably 3D, right? Won't it?
Well, yeah, but I mean like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see it. Like a mix mash
of content. So, huh. That's interesting. I don't know how I missed that one. But that could be interesting. Kingdom Battle. Rumored for quite some time. It exists. It'll mix Mario and the Rabbids series. I'm surprised I never played Rabbids, but that's pretty awesome. I don't see why that wouldn't be announced. But Ubisoft is, you know, we know we have Assassin's Creed, but I wonder if we're gonna see any like brand new IPs that they announce. Because I mean, they rebranded. They have a few big games coming out, but last year they announced a lot. They had Ghost Recon Wildlands. They had a big data dump on South Park: The Fractured Butthole. They had some new stuff for The Division, things like that. I mean, is there anything that you guys would like to see come back, or do you think we're going to see a new IP entirely that we haven't seen before?
I don't think so. With Far Cry and Assassin's Creed, they don't need anything else. Like, there's no real need to announce new IP. I mean, they had Steep last year.
Right.
Which was cool.
Yeah. Still like Steep.
Ghost Recon, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it was fun when I played it at E3, but I think if they announce anything, it'll be, oh, hey, by the way, we also do indie games, remember? Like Ubisoft Montreal, and they have that, I forgot what the studio is called, it's Ubi something. They did Child of Light and Valiant Hearts. Like, those are all great games, and maybe they come out and have like a sizzle reel on the games that they're currently working on or publishing under the Ubisoft, you know, umbrella. I think that would be really cool.
Right.
Otherwise, I mean, they have the Switch they're going to talk about, which is going to be a big moneymaker for them. And then, of course, Far Cry 5 and Assassin's Creed. Maybe they announce some remasters of some kind. That would be cool, too.
I have an interesting prediction. Splinter Cell coming back.
That would be cool.
At E3.
Like a teaser or something?
The next title from Splinter Cell. We haven't seen Splinter Cell since, I think, Blacklist.
I don't think so.
Well, you're wrong.
They have Rainbow Six.
Yeah. I mean, it's still like, it's a Tom Clancy game, but I mean, they brought out Ghost Recon Wildlands and they had Rainbow Six at the same time. Those are all Tom Clancy games. And I mean, they're going to bring out new content for Ghost Recon Wildlands, but it seems like they're doing a Tom Clancy almost every year at this point. I mean, for the last two or three years, we've seen a Tom Clancy game of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, man. That's my random prediction.
What about the last? What was the last Splinter Cell? Maybe in this new engine.
I think Blacklist was the last one, which came out back in. I got the date here. It was a long time ago, 2013. So it's been 5 years since we've seen a Splinter Cell title,
and it was fantastic.
No, 4 years. 4 years. Yeah, Blacklist was actually a really good game. I like the Splinter Cell series. I like it more than Ghost Recon. It's more, even though I'm not a huge stealth fighting game person, I'm intrigued by that. But I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I think that one will probably have to wait, only because there's so much shit they have to talk about.
Yeah, there's a lot. There is a lot. Last year they had a really long conference. I just hope we don't have that stupid Just Dance. I mean, we already have Just Dance out, but that was such a lame introduction to E3 last year for Ubisoft. So anyway, well, cool, guys. That is predictions for Ubisoft and Nintendo. I think that covers everything. So Switch, we're just hoping to see more first party titles come out. Super Mario, Splatoon. We know what their subscription fee is now, so that won't be a big surprise. Maybe we'll see something from Virtual Console. I don't know.
Oh man, I hope so.
And then Ubisoft, they're going to have a lot to talk about, but definitely Assassin's Creed and Far Cry will be their biggest presence, I would think. Anything else you guys want to add to the discussion?
Nope, just excited to get there.
Hell yeah.
1 week's time, Brett and I will be in La in Los Angeles.
Yeah, if you guys are going to be at E3 of some kind, be sure and hit us up on the social medias and let us know where you'll be. We'll come and join you and hang out as long as you're cool and awesome. But if you're listening to us, you're obviously cool and awesome. So
we don't meet those requirements. Just stay away.
But yeah, that wraps up our E3 predictions. Next week, like I said, we'll be taking a hiatus as we'll be at E3. So be sure and check us out. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the social channels will be doing a lot of content on the social medias for E3. And then come back the following week for our full coverage of E3. It'll be a huge, huge episode. A lot of stuff to talk about. There may even be a surprise guest interview. So be on the lookout for that following E3. I mean,
we should just say it, shouldn't we?
No.
Okay. We won't say it.
Leave it up to surprise.
You're going to want to come back.
You'll want to come back. It's very exciting. So that's going to conclude our discussion this week, guys. If there's something you want to hear us talk about, email us at hello@theinnergamer.net. And that wraps up our show. I would say, guys, where are we playing next week? But I think it's pretty clear we'll be playing a lot of stuff at E3. But Luis, you might be playing some Psychonauts, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going to say over this weekend that we're recording that I'm going to be playing more PC games because new PC. And Rhombus of Ruin, which seems really fun, really cool. The characters are great, and maybe finally finishing Neo, maybe. But
man, I keep
so
forgetting that
play,
game's around.
It's so good, man. I put like 30 hours in, and I'm not even halfway done.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Dang.
That said, I'm super excited for E3. I hope we get to try out all these new cool indie games.
Yeah, dude.
Cuphead's there. Like, I really want to play Cuphead.
Oh, man, I forgot about Cuphead. So yeah.
It's such a pretty game, but it's pretty, I don't know. You'll see when you get there and you get to play.
Right.
That show floor is incredible.
Is that your favorite game you hope to play there? What's everyone's favorite game they hope to play at E3?
Oh, that's a good question.
Well, it's Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Star Wars. I'm curious to see what they're bringing. Yeah.
It's going to be the same thing, just the more depth. Like, the shooting is not going to change.
Oh, yeah, it will.
I hope it does a little bit.
They already got that down.
No, it's still not that great.
I want to play Assassin's Creed. I miss that game. I hope it's good. Should be fun. And actually, I'm gonna play that new game that they're going to announce that we don't know about yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
That's what you're going to play.
It's going to be cool. So
insider information.
Insider information, exactly. Well, that wraps up our show, everybody. Be sure and check us out, not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after next. For more gaming goodness, you can visit theinnergamer.net for our latest podcasts, blogs, videos, and social channels, such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, and YouTube. If you like what you hear, leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend.
I will take it.
Okay.
Guys, I don't know if you know this or not, but you can give us money to do things on Patreon. It's a way for you, our listeners, to donate to our cause to bring you some great content that you want to see and hear. Plus, if you support us, we have a slew of awesome rewards waiting for you, such as signed t-shirts, being a guest on our podcast, or even joining us for a live D&D session. So head on over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. My name is Luis Gonzalez.
I'm Austin Morales.
And I'm Brayton Oski.
And you've been listening to The Inner Gamer!
Brett, this might be the first time you were the last person to say your name on this thing.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's
I was like, weird. What? And I'm Brayton Oski. I never heard that.
It's actually a lot easier to find.
That is true, actually. It is a lot easier to find.
I don't know why we didn't think of that.
Scare my dog every time. He was like, what the fuck?
That's pretty good.
Who's
I'll change the sound. Dude, we should make a compilation video of them.